all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or by going to veteransradio.net, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to veteransradio.net. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Donna Musil. She's a writer, lawyer, filmmaker, but we have her on because she's the daughter of an Army veteran, and she's the executive director of a really interesting group called Brats Without Borders. Donna, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Jim, for having me. I'm really excited.
Well, it's in reading the bio on you, you have some distinguishing features that I don't think anybody really envies, having moved 12 times and attended 11 schools on three continents. And I think I read somewhere you did like three high schools. Is that true?
Yes, that was difficult. Although at the time, you know, you don't really think about it. You just do it. But looking back, it was like, whoa, that's a lot. But, you know, that's what a lot of brats go through. In fact, when I was interviewing people for the documentary I made about military kids, I mean, I heard people moved up to 30 times, literally, before they graduated from high school. And, you know, no surprise, they don't know where they're from at that point. But
well, it's an interesting, and that's what I want to talk about. It's kind of a subculture because they've moved so much, and you have the, in many instances, you have these world experiences that other people don't have. But I should say that, you know, you did settle in some roots. You went to the University of Georgia for both undergrad and your law degree. You worked as a labor lawyer for some unions before pursuing a writing and filmmaking career. And you currently live out in Colorado, so there's a pretty good location to be. But as
I love it out here.
Yeah. So probably now, did you ever go through Colorado as one of the bases that you your dad moved through?
Never, actually. We lived in mostly on the East Coast, Georgia, North Carolina, Virginia. Then we were in Germany, and then Korea, San Francisco, Fort Knox. Those were our bases. So we never did come here. But my sister moved here, gosh, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. And so I just decided to come out and join her. And we just moved my mom from Georgia last year. So we're now all here.
Well, that's great. And this is a bigger group than people might think about. So there are reported to be some 2 to 3 million children of active duty National Guard and Reserve families. It really is a big, and this is on any given year, right? So it is a big number that keeps kind of growing, and then they age out, they become adults and go on with their lives. Do you have some handle around how many kids you consider in the Brats Without Borders category?
Well, it's a massive amount of people. I would probably guess that we are the largest invisible subculture in the country. They estimate about 15 million child and adult military brats are in America at any given time. But that's not including also a lot of the DOD civilian families that move all over the place. It's a really a massive group of people. Unfortunately, you can't tell that you belong to the group by just looking at someone. And therein lies the problem sometimes, because we don't know how to recognize each other. It's only when you start talking to people and sharing your experiences, you go, oh, I'm that too. And so that's one of the challenges we've had to reach people, because many brats will, you know, they talk about the brats that join the military, but there's many more that never join the military, and we have no clue where they are. There are very few groups. You know, the vets, they have the VA, and they have all the, you know, various groups, and even the wives. Well, it's not just wives now, but the spouses of military members, they have their groups. And the military kids were for a long time just kind of left out to wander the world, not knowing where they belonged. And since the advent of the internet, it's helped a little bit, because now all of a sudden a lot of these people, particularly overseas schools, kids, military brats that went to overseas schools, started finding each other on the internet and then forming alumni associations. So that's been very, very helpful in getting together and having these impromptu gatherings and parties every few years. So that's helped a lot.
That's the reason that this
film was able to get made.
And that was sort of your story. You in the late 1990s connected with a group of friends from one of the, I think it was a Korean high school that you went to, and said, hey, we're not the only ones out here. Maybe we ought to have a wider place to meet and socialize and talk about issues. And that was the spawning of Brats Without Borders in 1999.
Yes. And long before that, like, I wasn't at the very beginning of this. I mean, before I came around, there were groups like overseas brats groups, Joe Condrell, Mary Wirtz. I don't know if you ever heard of her. She wrote a book about military brats called Military Brats, Legacies of Childhood Inside the Fortress. She wrote about a lot of these issues long before I made the film. So what happened was, when I discovered my friends from Korea and we had a little impromptu get together, and it was like, oh my goodness, we have, you know, we all look different, we're different races, we're different jobs, everything, but we're all saying the same things. And I was like, this is fascinating. In fact, my first thought was to make a film about race in the military. You know, it was like, you know, how did integrating the military affect military kids over time? Because while in America you had all these groups that were fighting with each other, military kids have been going to school together since the 50s, you know, and it was just quite fascinating to watch this play out and how it affected people. So I started doing research, and during the course of that research, I came across Mary Wirtz's books and a woman named Stephanie Pressman's book. And so that's kind of what led to the making of the film, and started interviewing all these experts and interviewing I think I interviewed over 500 military brats from 18 to 80 on paper or on film. And the interviews on film were just, you know, fascinating and long. Like people would talk for hours. I remember getting a questionnaire back from someone that was like 90 pages tight.
Oh boy, they were just waiting for somebody to ask.
Exactly. And that was, you know, that was in the beginning of the internet, and you could, you know, you're just getting, there was no Facebook. There was nothing like that. It was just trying to get in touch with people by word of mouth through the internet. And it was an interesting project, to say the least.
Well, yeah, let's elaborate on that a little bit. So it took about 7 years to make the documentary, which I believe is titled Brats, Our Journey Home. So documentary filmmaking is not easy. It takes a long time, and then distribution is a challenge. Talk to us about how it got distributed, how folks can see it today, and what the response was to it.
It took a long time to make because I was not independently wealthy. I had to work other jobs while I was doing this at the same time. And but Brat stood up and helped and, you know, gave small donations. I started a nonprofit in order to make the film. And because when you would go out and try to get support from existing filmmaking organizations, people, because we're such an invisible subculture, people were like, well, who would care about that? You know, why should we do so? They just couldn't wrap their heads around the topic. And I was really sure that what I wanted to make sure was that the film remained honest and about the military kids. And when I say kids, I mean, you know, the children and the adults, what they were really saying, and it would not become a political kind of, you know, one side would want to make it anti-military and one side would want to make it pro-military.
Yeah. You weren't looking to do a propaganda piece.
Not at all. You know, it was about the kids. And so what happened is we ended up having to do it ourselves. I mean, I did it myself and with a lot of help along the way from brats all over the country. For example, and Chris Christopherson narrated the film, I mean, nobody charged us anything. He let us use all his music for free. General Schwarzkopf was in there, didn't charge a thing. Nobody charged us anything because I didn't have the money to pay it at the time. And let's see. Distribution was a challenge. We went to APT. So the first thing we did, I don't know how to describe this, we did, you know, try to do the typical route, right? And we went to a lot of film festivals and we won a few awards and did all that. But it was like you were so beholden to the film festival's schedule. And so, you know, if they scheduled you on a Friday night, you had a whole group of people. If they scheduled you on a Wednesday morning, there were 10 people in the audience, you know. And I finally decided this was not the best way to do this. And so another brat that I was working with that was helping me with the film named Tim Wirtz, he came up with this idea to let's take the film on the road like a rock band, you know. And we would fortunately another Brad had stepped up and given us a little money to take the money to take the film out on the road, Tony and Tessa Stevenson, and so we had a little bit of help with that. So what we did is we took the film around the country like a rock band. We would target cities that we knew had a lot of military brats, and we knew this information from the overseas schools
alumni groups,
exactly. And so we knew where people were, you know. You don't find a lot of military brats up in New Hampshire, for example, but you'll find tons of them in Sacramento. it's odd, you know, where people end up. But so what we would do is go to those towns and contact all the newspapers and radio and TV, and we would get, you know, the advertising through the media, and we would show the film in the town for, you know, one or two nights for free generally. And so we would have just like 700 people would show up, and then we would sell copies of the DVD afterwards, and usually 50% of the people that went to the film would buy a copy of the DVD, and that could help fund us to go to the next place.
Yeah, they had a brother or sister or friend they wanted to share it with, who were also brats, military brats.
Oh, I know. We would have people buy 10 copies. I'm like, you know, and then they'd come back and buy more and more copies. They said, every time I loan it to somebody, they never give it back. So I have to go buy another copy. But this was pretty rare in filmmaking at that time. And we had a few offers from traditional distributors, but being a lawyer, I was able to read the contracts and I saw what they were asking, and I was like, nah, I'm not signing this. And so we just did it our AFN TV in like 180 countries. The only place that hasn't really been shown on television yet is America.
Interesting.
So we're actually, I've been involved in this other film right now, but I've been thinking about trying to do a virtual screening, you know, just kind of a free virtual screening on the internet now. But in the meantime, if people want to see it or buy a copy, you can still buy a copy of the DVD or get a digital download on our website at usabrat.org or bratswithoutborders.org or .com, either one of them, and go to the Bratz page and you'll find it.
What did you find in all of those interviews that you did? What was some of the commonality that you said, yeah, this makes Bratz different than other kids who grew up, and this sort of ripples across time? Were there items like that?
Yes, and like I said before, Mary Wirtz really covered a lot of this stuff in her book, but then when I interviewed all these people, they just reiterated everything I said. So, you know, it's almost like for every positive, there's an equal and opposite negative for growing up, or I hate to say positive and negative, because it's really more of a challenge versus a benefit kind of analysis. And like some of the benefits of growing up military, you know, would be this very similar probably to a lot of soldiers, you know, this idea of a mission for something greater than yourself. You know, education, a real emphasis on education. One thing that's rarely talked about is military kids outperform their civilian peers consistently. And what's really interesting about that is it doesn't matter if their parents are officers or enlisted. So, you know, you have all these enlisted people or some enlisted people that, you know, there's no college education, but the kids are still all going to college. They're kids. And so I guess the kids are picking this up from the military as institution, a real focus on education, the ability to travel, the worldly kind of tolerance of difference, not so afraid of being different, not afraid of trying new things, because, well, we had to, you know, that's what we were trained to do. So I try not to take too much credit for that, because, you know, that's what our parents, our lifestyle taught us how to do.
Yeah, so that idea of moving every 2 or 3 years, hey, you're going to get a new set of friends, a new school, a new start, new sports teams, whatever it might be. And that just becomes normal. You have to adjust.
Right, Exactly. So I could pick up at one point in my life, I picked up and I moved from Los Angeles to Ireland and I didn't know anyone. I had one contact and it was like, oh, how can you do that? I'm like, well, I don't know. I just know how to do that. But it wasn't because I was anything special. It was just that I was being trained to do it. But then on the other hand, you have the opposite, you know, challenges. So you can move anywhere, but a lot of times military kids as adults will find that they use geographical location as an answer to problems. You know, geographically moving is an answer to a problem, right? So they don't really know how to, we've not been trained to stick things through. You know what I'm saying?
Didn't get that role in the play. That's okay. Next year, I'm going to another school.
Exactly. Or I don't like who I am this year, or things didn't work out so well with this personality, so I'm going to just try a new personality in this new place. Well, then you start growing up and you're like, well, who am I? And where do I really fit in? And, you know, not being able to experience the ebb and flows of friendships, and just because you get in a fight doesn't mean that it's over. Like, I heard from one woman that was like, you know, she just went home one day and said, I want a divorce, and left. The husband never even knew she was unhappy. You know. But that's what we were also trained to do too, is to kind of keep things inside. You know, you don't have much intimacy or bonding because it's always becoming interrupted. Control issues. I mean, a lot of brats will have control issues because they had no control when they were young.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I also saw a stat that military brats are like 2 times more likely to join the military, follow into the family business, I suppose. Which is both, yes. Both has challenges and benefits, I suppose.
Well, the funny thing was, of the people that I interviewed, the happiest people to me were the brats who joined the military because they stayed with their culture. You know, they never left it. So when they have problems, it's going to be when they retire and go out into the civilian population as an adult after being, you know, in the military their entire lives up to that point. And then they're going to have the challenges there that military brats will have that didn't join the military, you know, earlier.
Do you think there's, in looking at your website, bratswithoutborders.org, over the last 24 years, among the projects you've done is sort of art programs for kids who are currently in the military, which is kind of interesting. But do you get a sense that the military is doing a better job or focusing a little bit more on this unique subculture?
I think they're trying and they want to, but I think to really do a better job of it, they're going to have to be willing to be more introspective and honest about the choices that they make and they ask military families to make and how that affects people over time, and take responsibility for that. Yes, they have a lot of, they seem to have a lot of fluffier kind of, they're acknowledging the child. They're not really acknowledging the military brat adult. So let's say, you know, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of these kids are raised in the military a lot longer than many of the veterans, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Four years, I was a military brat for 16 years until my dad died. Now, they do have TAPS now. They have a few more programs that are really trying to do well. But I think that the military does well when you're talking about difficulties caused by particularly somebody else, the war, you know, you have a soldier that's killed in the war, they'll have a program for the people that remain. Whereas like when my dad died, they had nothing. I mean, we had nothing. It was just like one day I'm in the military, the next day I'm going to a civilian school for my senior year and don't know a soul. But there's nothing, there was no like, here, let me prepare you for this. Here, how is the civilian world is a little bit different than the military world. And here are some things that could come up. You know, like when you go to, when a soldier goes to war, I don't know, you tell me, do you feel like that the soldiers are being prepared better to leave the military environment than they used to be?
Oh, I think there, you know, as you say, there's a lot more programs they're trying. I don't know how well it's going to work, or it is working. I guess we'll see down the road. But there's certainly more programs that recognize it, and it's good to hear that at least they're trying as it relates to the kids. But I guess we won't know for another decade or two if any of that's really helping out. We're talking to Donna Musil, who's a writer, lawyer, filmmaker, proud Army brat. Moved 12 times and attended 11 schools on three continents, including three high schools, one in Korea. About Brats Without Borders, a group that she started back in, I guess, 1999. And it's an interesting subculture, isn't it, Donna?
Yes, and it has a lot of crossover with other cultures. Like whenever I show the Bratz, Our Journey Home film, I'll always get foster kids that come up to me afterwards. It's like, oh, that's my life. You know, I went from this house to this house to this house to this house. And then at 18, I'm on my own. And they'll say, that's exactly how I, you know, we feel. So there are crossovers with different groups. But Bratz themselves, I don't know, we still have a real invisibility problem. And I'm not quite sure how to get over that and to get it out there. And there's so many things that we could be doing for military brats as children and adults that don't really cost that much money, but it would take acknowledging that they matter, you know. And you brought up something before, that so many military brats will join the military. So you would behoove the institution to pay more attention to this.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. And we appreciate the time that you've provided to Veterans Radio today to talk about this group, this 15 million strong of military brats. And encourage folks to go to your website, follow the work. You're working on some other film projects at the moment, but glad to get you on, Donna, and talk about this.
Well, thank you. And I do want to bring up one other a woman that I've been working with for the past 10 years, Laura Belden, who we put that the art camp. She's been working with children for many years. She's an brat artist, and has we put together the traveling art exhibit, Unclassified, the Military Kid Art Show, and that won a Newman's Own Award. And so we tried, you know, for 7 years we moved this exhibit around the country to try to raise awareness of the military brat subculture and really help these 15 million people understand that they're not alone and they do belong to this wonderful, humongous group of people that think and have experienced very similar things. And so that is their home. It's not going to be a place. It's really each other.
Well, we hope we're helping raise awareness of that here on Veterans Radio. And again, Donna, thanks for your extra time today.
Thank you very much, Jim.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We would again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America, Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.